Do you want me to do it, or what would you feel?
I can try one out.
Yep, let's do that.
Welcome to What If, a Creativity in a Nutshell, a podcast delivered to you by Burke School of Communication.
Oh, I like the delivered bit.
Right?
Yeah. Classy.
Is it actually, though, delivered by us?
Yeah, but I'm going to put strings behind it so it sounds classy and okay, it sounds delivered.
Okay, fantastic. Let's do that. Welcome to What If, Creativity in a Nutshell, a podcast delivered to you by Burke School of Communication.
So today I'm joined again by Christopher. Christopher, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And today we're in this episode number two, we're going to talk about why creative constraints can really focus creative thinking and why limitations can be your best friend. Even if that sounds a little bit counterintuitive and weird when you first hear it or when you first think about it.
Yeah. I mean, choices. That's the hardest thing in creativity, I think. So it's going to be interesting to talk about how, with limitations, you can excel in creativity.
It's funny you mentioned choices. There's a really good book, and I'm sure it's a TED Talk because everything's a TED Talk, but it's about the paradox of choice, and I think it's by a guy called Barry Schwartz. Link in show notes. But really, it's all about, there's a great anecdote that was like, there was an ice cream company, and when it gave away free samples, it gave away three different flavors. And lots of people loved it and lined up and took lots. And when they offered 27 different flavors, people got really confused and kind of ignored them.
Interesting.
Yeah. Even though 27 flavors of ice cream is probably better than three, it freaks people out. Choice is a double-edged sword. It can be good and bad.
100%. I remember when I was first applying for my sort of, in Sweden, we call it gymnasium. So I think it's the sort of high school.
Yeah, high school.
High school. And that was 2 years after they basically created 50 different programs. So before that, you could basically choose five. And when it was my turn, you could choose maybe 20. And I remember spending the most part of that summer going, what do I want to do with my life? And it created all these sort of existential questions in my head, and I had no idea. And it was so super hard to just go, I'm going to choose this, because then I had to say no to all the other choices.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, like, you know, when you're at high school, you are given a whole bunch of classes and curriculum, and you either like it or not, or whatever.
Yeah.
But then, so like... I think a lot of people can relate to the freak out the first time you visit a university or their website or something like that. It's just like, you know, if you can be anything in the world, I don't know how that doesn't end up with anxiety.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is taking the conversation too far, kind of leaving the world of creativity. But to that point with anxiety, I think now we live in a time where anxiety is a real thing for a lot of people. And we also live in a time where you can be the master of your own life in a way that you never could before. So you can do all these different choices, everything at your fingertips. And it's just a matter of making the right choice and doing the right thing and doing all of that because you can. And so it leaves us in a place where we're paralyzed.
If you live in a meritocracy, and hopefully all of you listening live in a meritocracy where you're kind of based on your skills and talents and not the family you come from or the class you're born into or the color of your skin or anything dumb like that. You know, your value to society is based on your contribution or your skills or whatever. That's really good in lots of ways because all of a sudden it doesn't matter where you're born or whatever. But it's like there's anxiety that comes along with that. But that's a slightly different podcast.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, today I want to talk about constraints and limitations, and maybe we should explain a little bit about what we mean because that might be a bit ambiguous or confusing to some people. But we work a lot here at Burke School of Communication with creative thinking that's really focused on solving particular problems. And that might be, how do you make a business more sustainable? That's big and ambitious. Or it might be, how do we make a banking app easier to use? You know, so there's definitely goals in mind. I think we do the service to our students of not telling them to do whatever they want. And I think that phrase is something that you might have heard in your life, Christopher. But like the one thing that I personally really freak out about is if someone tells me to do whatever whatever I want.
Mm,
like, yeah. It's hard not to be a bit of a smartass and just be like, okay, I want elephants dancing on a cake. And then they're like, and then if someone says, but that's ridiculous, you can turn around and say, but you said do anything you want.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, you see this sometimes, and it's like, it almost links back to the, like, our first episode, which is like the myth of the genius. Sometimes it feels like if people are talking to creatives or people that whose job involves creative thinking, they don't want to limit them. They don't want to get in the way of the genius.
Mm.
Like, people shroud themselves with mystery and try to be a little bit ambiguous about their creative thinking. And so all of a sudden they think they are doing the right thing by not putting limits or constraints or those kinds of things around it.
Please get in the way, I would say.
Yeah, please.
That's your job, to get in the way of the creative genius, in quotation marks. So when I talk to my students about creativity and how to kind of spark your creativity and to become, you know, as good as possibly can, you need constraints. For example, imagine you're in a room with 20 doors and you're given the instructions to run through the door as quickly as possible. The first thing that you're going to ask yourself is which door? And that's going to cost a lot of time. And it's not going to be a very efficient sort of progress or process. But if you close all the other doors and there's just one door open, then you can know where to run and you can run as fast as you possibly can and focus on the speed rather than the choice of which door. And so I think it's the same thing when it comes to, you know, creating a solution to a problem. If you know exactly what problem you're going to sort of solve, and you have restraints such as time, money, resources, then that's going to limit the different options that you can explore, and then you can focus on exploring the right option. There's a constraints test that you can do. And that's like, write a novel without using the word E. The letter E. That's going to challenge you quite a lot to choose your words precisely and to describe the things that you want to talk about in a completely different way than you would have having been able to use the letter E, for example.
I don't think I could even write a sentence without the letter E. I think my sentence would be like, hi, mum. I mean, yes, totally. So we commonly use a whole bunch of constraints and limitations to keep people moving and get them headed in the right direction.
Mm.
Should we go through a few of them and kind of point out why they can be useful?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so I mean, a first limitation or constraint is a pretty obvious one, and that is time.
Mm.
So one of the bad things about creative thinking is that if you're an optimistic person, you always think your next idea might be better than the last.
Mm.
So so that means that in your mind, a creative task can expand to fill the amount of time of your lifetime or whatever. It can keep growing and expanding to take up all of that time. So in high school, I don't think I loved deadlines. As a professional, deadlines are a blessing. I love them.
Yeah, 100%. I know that because I've done a lot of courses here at Berg's with different students, and I've actually seen this in reality, is that if you have a course that runs over a period of, say, 3 months, the end result is rarely better than if you have a course that runs a week. Because you have to make choices. You have to decide what to do and then start working on the actual execution and tell that story in the best possible way. To that point that you had before, that if you think that the next idea is going to be better, you're just going to end up in a never-ending loop. And that is the quickest way to kill any kind of enthusiasm about what you do, because you're going to hit that wall so many times. And we always hit that wall, but it's just a matter of how many times you're going to hit that wall and how long do you stay at that wall. But if you have the restraint of time, you have to focus and you have to make choices and you have to close those doors.
Yeah, it really gives you a sense of momentum. So it's like you need to make decisions even though they might not be perfect. And I think that's a good thing to accept in lots of areas of creative thinking. And the power of momentum is really considerable. And it's like it keeps you moving. It helps you time box and you reach certain kind of milestones. So like by Monday, I have an idea. By Tuesday, I start drawing it. By Wednesday, I show other people and get feedback. On Thursday, I revise it. And then on Friday, I present it.
And it actually boosts your confidence because you tick the boxes that you set up for yourself and you actually do it.
Yeah. Also, like, one thing about limiting time is it reduces the, you know, this idea that a creative genius should be doing the work. So it's like you get down to an idea that like something that's pretty good is the right thing. You know, if you walk into a room and tell people to come up with a whole bunch of ideas for a marketing campaign or whatever, and you give them 2 hours, they'll be a lot more chilled out and relaxed than if they were given 3 months, because the expectation grows with time.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. I think once you can do that, another good tip is even play a little game with yourself. Like I set little timers and deadlines to myself all the time, and they're all fake and they only exist in my head. I work with a 25-minute timer if I'm brainstorming ideas, and then I give myself a little 5-minute time off. You know, I know that I can do something for that amount of time and I can focus, and it's just like I don't expect myself to be a genius at the end of it. As long as I've filled a page with good and bad ideas, I'm pretty happy.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, going back to the way we're wired, we can't stay focused for that long. And especially not in this time and age when you get distractions from right and left every second. And so it's really good to time box and to make sure that now I put off time to this and I'm going to focus on that, and then you do it. And then that's going to keep that momentum going. So time is a very good constraint, and it's something that we often have, you know, working professionally, there is always a timeline. However, sometimes it's too long.
Like if I'm very honest, I think we give students still too long to work on stuff, and I'd rather them do more okay stuff more often than something that's 10% better in 3 times the time.
Yeah.
Another constraint is money or budget.
Hmm.
I mean, commercially, that kind of makes sense. But even if you're trying to throw your partner a great birthday weekend, I mean, you've got a budget. You probably don't want to take out a loan from your bank to do it,
yeah.
Depending on how you feel about that person in the moment. But it's like a budget can be a really useful thing. Human brains really like tight spots. So like the way we've kind of evolved is to make tools and make use of the stuff that is right here, right now. I think we've kind of evolved to like those limitations, and your brain can get wildly creative if you have to include things that initially feel limiting. But as soon as you start to loosen up, you can start to see those constraints and tools as a really liberating experience, because they give you permission to think of more lateral ideas, stranger ideas, or to really challenge what is normal. Whereas, you know, I would love this example, but if you're given an unlimited marketing budget, you could just have the logo on every space all of the time.
Yeah.
So money can make you lazy.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, if bigger is not necessarily the answer, but smarter is. And so, because I remember I actually had that brief once. It wasn't an unlimited budget, but it was a budget that was ridiculous for what we were going to do. So we were going to relaunch a shoe brand in Australia. I can't remember the name of the brand, but it was a brand that everyone had. I mean, your generation would have had it. Like it was like a Vans, but for like from the 80s.
I feel like there's about 6 generations that owns Vans as a brand.
Yeah, probably. But so they were like, yeah, we have this big launch, and you know, we have this ridiculous amount of money. What do we do? And we became lazy because we were like, oh, we can do whatever we want and it doesn't really make sense and we don't have to have any like hard KPIs or restraints or anything. So our idea was literally this. I'm almost ashamed saying this because we were 2 Swedes in Australia and we just took the word launch quite literal. So we decided that we were going to shoot these shoes up into space and photograph them, do the product shots with the earth behind them. And the client bought it. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, you're describing a very expensive Photoshopped image, but yes.
Exactly. And so we wanted to burn like $1 million going to New Zealand to like this rocket field where you could shoot it up, and we got like permission from NASA to do it and all that. It was intense and it was stupid and it never actually happened, which I'm kind of thankful for, because that would have been a very unresponsible use of money.
Maybe, but it's a great story to tell to, you know, people in 30 years' time. It's kind of fun. I like it. Yeah, it's a fun story.
Yeah, but with that money, you could create something that is so much more interesting. than to just recreate a Photoshopped image.
So media?
Yeah, so media, or the way something's expressed.
Okay.
I think that can be a really nice one.
Yeah.
Because there's obviously, like, you know, birthday parties happen in real life. Cooking happens in a kitchen. But what happens if you challenge yourself to cook out of your house on the weekend?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So all of a sudden you're just taking assumptions and just being like, well, what about if I take the biggest assumption off the table? Like, what's cool about that? What's interesting about that?
Mm.
So it's like, you know, a classic one in marketing is like, have a really fantastic campaign that either isn't on TV or doesn't exist on a screen. Because, like, you know, in the old days, everything would start as a TV campaign.
Yep.
And in these days, everything starts on social media. So what happens if something could only exist physically? I think you'd have to take a really unique position in the year 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it would also make it kind of exclusive
to
the people who are actually in the vicinity of that physical space.
Yeah. So like if you're a retailer, that can be really interesting if you're trying to draw people into a, you know, a new restaurant or whatever. But it's like, I think even just setting up those experiments with yourself or with a wider team can be really nice. But it's like the good thing about being you is you get to experiment on yourself.
Yeah.
And that's like, I know that sounds kind of weird and slightly kinky, but it's like, it's a really nice thing to be able to shift your perspective by changing the constraints and the goals.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, I remember back in, I think it was 2009 or 10. So it's a decade ago. And Twitter was this new thing. And there was a class here at Berg's who wanted to market themselves to their to the industry, and they used Twitter. And so their constraint was use this new platform, only Twitter, to get as much attention to yourselves as you possibly can. And so they created an artwork that was a digital artwork that was also then represented in the physical world. And so if you retweeted their class, you got your little avatar on that piece of artwork. And depending on how many followers you had, you would gain a certain amount of space on that artwork. At the time, there was only one person who had enough followers to take over the entire space, and that was Ashton Kutcher. And so the whole campaign was, don't tell Ashton. Because if you tell Ashton and he retweets it, he's going to own the artwork. So it was a matter of getting as many people and many avatars as possible onto this artwork. And obviously this exploded. And at the end, Ashton Kutcher found out about it and he retweeted it to his millions of followers. So this little group in Stockholm created an idea that had cost no money, zero, using only Twitter. And they got like millions and millions of impressions. And they created this artwork. They went over to LA. They handed it over to Ashton Kutcher, who now has it in his house. So that's pretty cool.
Twitter is such a obvious example for people. I think like, you know, the character limit used to be 140 characters. Now it's 280. And I think like, I can't think of any other thing in the modern world that has improved people's writing as much as limiting their characters.
Yeah.
There's a Mark Twain saying that he's like, I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote you a long letter. Mm. It's like everyone can add words, but like when you need to tighten up your expressions to get it punchy and into a tweet, I think that's really powerful.
It definitely is, because you have to be mindful of every single letter that you jot down.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like Twitter suffers from the stuff that's left out. Like there's a whole lot of nuance and it's easy to be misunderstood if you're a jerk or an American president or whatever. Like it's so
hashtag Covfefe. Yeah.
So it's like it's, you know, it's not always the right tool for the job, but it's a great constraint that like a huge amount of people have to work with. And I think they've like the quality of writing has improved.
Definitely.
What is another constraint that we often use? I mean, there's another constraint that people often have in the world are like competitions to do something. So there's like an X Prize. And another great constraint at the moment is like there's a big competition in the world right now to produce a $1 coronavirus test. So the good thing about that is like you've got a whole bunch of people working on something that can then be used by millions or billions of people in the developing world. And there's a really tight constraint about this $1 thing. And it's like, so long as it's scientifically accurate, you can do whatever the hell you want to get to that $1 test.
Mm.
That's cool. I think that's cool.
Yeah. And it also, it includes a few different constraints. So it includes the price point.
Yep.
So money. It includes time because we don't have a lot of time. It needs to happen fast.
Yeah. It's a competition.
It's a competition. And it needs to be scalable.
And it's, and another constraint is that it's a coronavirus test.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not like find a $1 test and it's like, okay, it's not a $1 pregnancy test. That's not the biggest issue this year.
Yeah.
Well, depending who you are. Whatever.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, another constraint can also actually be the resources, sort of the human resources,
yeah.
The group or the disciplines that you have at your disposal to create something.
Yeah. Another great constraint is if you lack a skill.
That's good.
Yeah. So... I've got lots of friends that are art directors, and we have this kind of romantic notion that art directors are artists and that can draw beautiful things.
I cannot draw to save my life.
No, my men look like women and my women look like men and my dogs look like cats. I'm terrible. I agree. But it's like, if you suck at something, it's kind of like, you know, it's a little bit like those stories you hear about people that lose a sense and then their other senses develop to compensate and to kind of like to take a bit more of the load. So I've got some, I got a friend who's an art director and he's colorblind. So he's very conservative and he gets lots of feedback about what color is on his screen. But lots of his design is in black and white because he knows that he can do that stuff. So he's really good with setting limitations based on his own shortcomings. And I think that's really cool. And it's also like, I love the idea that you use something that you're not good at to get better overall. I think that's really cool.
That's really nice. I mean, but then I have a question for you because your cats look like dogs.
Yeah.
What sense or what skill have you developed, do you think?
I'm like my drawing, I'm terrible at drawing. So I got really nerdy on a computer and then I got really technical to be able to be good at art direction and design related stuff that didn't involve me with a pen and paper.
Mm.
And also like I tried to get better at writing and strategic stuff because real art directors are going to kick my ass.
Yeah. I actually agree. Not that you're not a good art director, but the way that I've sort of, because I remember when I first, when I was a student here at Berg's and I was about to start my first internship, I actually panicked because I couldn't draw. Because in my head, an art director should be able to draw. And I couldn't. And that was a real issue for me. But then I realized that what do I have then? So what do I bring to the table outside of drawing? And I think it was my sort of human skills to understand what makes people tick. And that is my go-to tool, for example. But a funny anecdote that ties into this, one of the best copywriters I've ever had the pleasure to get to know, he is a copywriter, he's from Australia, and he is so dyslexic, but he is a phenomenal storyteller. I remember when we had, we were working on a big pitch and he was writing down the word crowdsource. But in Australian, when you say crowdsource, you say crowdsource. So he wrote crowdsource.
Oh, yeah, like tomato sauce.
Yeah, like tomato sauce.
Yeah.
And that was like, and our client was one of the biggest newspapers in Australia. So we obviously had to spell check that. But it was just a funny thing that he just wrote it the way it sounded. And being Australian, things sound a bit strange sometimes.
Yeah.
But his skill to tell a story and to move people is unprecedented, in my opinion. He can make anyone cry, laugh within, you know, the time of 5 seconds.
Yeah, because, I mean, those skills are not the mechanical skills. They're the skills that show understanding about people and culture and products and the world and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
You know, a single-minded proposition is something that the marketing world uses. Half of you that are hearing this are bored with my explanation. The other half are trying to work out what the hell we're talking about. But a single-minded proposition is generally like the one piece, one idea, or the one thought that people take away from something. So if it's a, like, let's use something simple. If it's a pen, it might be the smoothest and most consistent pen that you can buy. Mm. So it's all about, you know, so all of a sudden you've got a constraint that your ideas need to be about the smoothness of a pen.
Mm.
And that stops you from wandering off in weird directions because it gives you something to measure your ideas against.
It does. And that ties back to strategy because often a single-minded proposition comes from the sort of the strategy work that's been done before you get into the creative process. And I think that strategy is a creative's best friend, 100%. Because if you don't have a strategy, then you're just creating a fairy tale and you're just creating something like a nice story that has no depth to it. It tells you in which direction you should explore because in order for it to make sense. I love strategy. I think strategy is the best thing that ever happened since sliced bread.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. If you're a creative thinker, they're your best partner in crime often.
They're your anchor.
They're also fun to hang out with because they're weird and quirky and they see the world in a unique way. So they're kind of fun to have lunch with as well.
Exactly. But what strategy lacks is that sort of that lateral thinking, that excitement. So that's the thing that creates gold is to have a really solid strategy and then you add creativity on top so that you create a system that is emotional and that moves people. Because without the creativity, strategy is facts. And facts are not that interesting. I mean, yeah, they can be interesting, but it doesn't really move you. And without strategy, it's just, you know, an idea.
Yeah, I think they try and give creative thinkers a springboard to jump in the right direction. Another really good thing about having a proposition or a central thing that you want to communicate is that you start to take out the subjectivity of stuff. So one thing you quickly learn, and I'm sure you've all discussed ideas from like what kind of meal should we eat tonight to what's the best marketing direction for a new product, is like it comes down to personal choice a lot. So it's all of a sudden it's like having one of those weird conversations with your partner about what color white your walls should be.
Mm.
And
it's like eggshell or coconut.
Yeah, it's totally. It's like the off-white, the beige, the ivory. Everyone's got an opinion and that's great. But it's like if you've got something that helps you step out of your own head and your own preferences and be like, this constraint is the best way of solving a problem.
Mm.
You can start to talk more objectively about something. And I think that can really help.
I remember a brief I had working for Telstra, which is the equivalent to Telia here in Scandinavia, in Australia. We were working for their business consumers. And the single-minded proposition, I remember it today because it's such a good proposition. It's such a good insight. And that is Australia's biggest business is Australia's small businesses. So the different entrepreneurs around the country together amassed to the biggest business that Australia has. And so that helps us as creatives to really come up with ideas to make that story sort of emotional and engaging and because it hits a note in you. If you're a small business owner, you realize that I'm important because I'm a part of the biggest business in this country.
Yeah.
And so to give them that is a creative choice and a creative sort of execution, but it's based on the insight that it's just facts.
Yeah.
And so we didn't go explore something completely different because it wasn't relevant. This was the thing that was relevant.
Yeah, exactly. And it means that when you're coming up with ideas, you know, if you've got ideas about every business is unique, well, that can be a good idea, but it's not for this project because it's not about uniqueness. It's about empowering small business to feel big and important and to let small businesses know that they're being taken seriously.
Absolutely.
So I think that's another really useful constraint. Are there any constraints that you like to introduce to get people moving?
I mean, there is a constraint that might not necessarily work when you're out in the world creating real stuff, or it might, but it's the constraint that for words, for example. So you have to within, because we talked about this the other week.
Yes.
If you have a brief and you're supposed to sell a new taxi service, you're supposed to come up with ideas for a new Uber, let's say.
Yeah.
And you have to include the word Thailand in your storytelling, or you have to work with the notion of fear, or you have to work with the notion of flexibility, then that will catapult your mind into a certain sort of area where you can explore freely because you have those constraints. And it's super helpful. It's just kind of like a game, but it really helps your creative juices flowing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an online dictionary is a really great thing. Most of them have like a little random button. So it's really nice to like, if you're trying to think about ideas, hit that random word button and be like, okay, all of your ideas need to have the concept of swimming pool in there somehow. They need to somehow relate to a swimming pool. And so you can do all these little experiments with yourself or with others. And it's like, it might sound kind of weird and crazy, but you will find as soon as your head gets around that concept that it can be a really productive constraint. And it can like, you can have ideas that you look back and be like, okay, without hitting that random dictionary button, I probably wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah. And I think it's important to look at constraints, not necessarily as constraints, but as a starting point.
Yeah, you need to see the walls not as a hard surface that you're going to run into and hurt yourself, but like as a beautiful frame for your thinking and your work.
Absolutely.
So Christopher, do you have any go-to constraints that you find most interesting or most productive in your life and work?
I would say time. Time for me is the number one thing that really gets me going because I am a procrastinator. I love to do things tomorrow if I can. And so time as a constraint really helps me to do it now and to not sort of delay the process. And I mean, I've said this, and I know probably a lot of you listeners have said this too. I work well under pressure. Yeah, that's just an excuse, really.
It is an excuse.
But I've actually managed to because I'm a procrastinator, I managed to time box myself and be super efficient when I don't have a lot of time. So I work quite fast.
Yep.
And I do it because I am inherently lazy. And so that's a thing that really kind of helps me with time makes me better. Time constraints makes me better. What about you, Adam?
I mean, I think I'm really the same. I work in 25 minute bursts. I don't work for longer than that. I set a timer every time, and I know that as soon as I pick up a pen, I'm gonna have 25 minutes worth of ideas, and then I can go for a walk outside, go grab coffee. I also am lucky enough to work fairly quickly, which is nice, and kind of furiously, which is good. A lot of the time. But I also play lots of little games for myself. Like I also set, even if I'm given constraints of a project that have kind of, you know, time, money, budget, a proposition or a central message we want to communicate, I often do like little dictionary games or like sometimes I play a little game where it's like, okay, if this could only exist as a Instagram filter, what would it be? So I do a whole bunch of those little things that just help me get thinking, and they're really productive. It's like I used to think that constraints are big and scary and limiting and they're a bit of a buzzkill, but I've come to, you know, I've got a bit of a Stockholm syndrome thing with them. I've come to love them.
Yeah. Love your constraints, basically.
Exactly. So thank you for joining us. Thanks for joining What If? Creativity in a Nutshell, a podcast brought to you by Berg's School of Communication.
Fantastic. And next episode, we are going to talk about what, Adam?
We're going to talk about all the different kinds of careers you can have as a creative thinker and all the places where the world needs new ideas and that you can have a fun and interesting life doing.
Exciting. I can't wait.
Sounds good.
All right. See you next time.
Bye. That's good. What do you reckon?
Yeah.